This is the When You Die podcast. If it has to do with death and dying, we're talking about it. Today's host is Kelly McLean.
My guest today is Sean Lavalure Adama. Sean is a funeral director who found her calling in the death industry in 2006 at an Omega Society in Orange County. She was the area manager for Smart Cremation and Gateway Cremations, overseeing operations for multiple companies and their locations up and down the Southern California coast. She became a co-owner of Argos Funeral Home, which specialized in non-traditional and generally awesome burial methods like lunar burial, where one's ashes are sent into outer space. Sean left to pursue her own dream of comprehensive death support. Usually, dying and death have two totally different support teams, and Sean's DIY dying vision is to have a continuity of support where you can go to the same team from the deathbed through the wake, funeral, and scattering of ashes or burial. You can follow her at DIY Dying, I know I do, and watch the vision unfold as she launches. I was curious if you would tell us a little bit about what you did with the Argos Funeral Home. Usually, in this day and age, even when you think of what to do with your body, you think, okay, well, I could be buried in a traditional kind of casket ceremony in a cemetery, or I could be cremated and my family can scatter the ashes or put them in an urn. Right. I think probably a lot of America thinks of those as their options.
Correct. That those are their only two options, most people think. They don't realize there are other options such as green burial, full body burial at sea, even things to do with loved ones' ashes after they've been cremated. There's a volcano scattering. There's all kinds of things.
Yeah, tell us a little bit more about each of those interesting things that you guys did there and that are options available.
Sure. One of the most proudest things that I think I'm proud of when I was there was the fact that we got a client or a case that wanted to do the lunar burial. What that is you purchase a small space on the rocket and your ashes would go to the moon.
Yeah. When you said lunar burial, I thought of a bunch of hippies like topless burying their loved one on the full moon outside or something.
Oh, no.
And I had no idea that that's a thing that you can actually.
Yeah. Your ashes can actually go to the moon so that every time you look at the moon, you can be like, there's my loved one.
That's incredible.
Yeah. It's only a small amount unless you pay to have more. It's only a gram of ashes. So in a sense, it's a memorial keepsake that goes up there. So it's not like the whole body can go up. If you want, I'm sure they could, but it's in the millions for that because of the payload.
How much did it run for it to have just a...
Just the small amount. I think the price is still going for $12,500.
Wow.
Yeah.
In funeral world, that's not that much money. I mean,
right.
People forget it's quite an industry, actually.
Correct.
So how does it work? There's a rocket that goes up for this specific purpose.
Well, I'm assuming that the rocket is going up for other things as well.
Right.
We're just purchasing the space on the rocket to get to the moon.
Yeah.
And then from my understanding is that there's a rover that would be released on the moon that will then retrieve each canister of the loved ones that are participants to go to the moon. And then they will be somehow placed on the surface of the moon. I'm not so sure the technicalities of if it goes in the soil or if it's just left there, how that works. But granted that the rocket makes it to the moon. We don't have any, explosions or anything.
Right.
But then they would be there forever. There's another option where the ashes could circle the moon and then come back. You have going into deep space.
Wait, circle the moon and then come back?
Yeah, from my understanding that the other option, there's two lunar options.
Yeah.
And I'd have to triple check on the one that goes, it circles the moon.
So it's like an ashes joyride.
Right.
And then you get them back.
Right.
That's a little funny.
Right. Because there also are a couple other ones where the ashes would go up to the stratosphere and then come back down like a burning star back into the atmosphere.
But they're shot out, or they're like, they come back in a capsule that your loved one keeps.
They come back in a capsule that your loved one keeps, and then you get a certificate that it had done that.
Uh-huh.
So they plan it just right so that they know where to retrieve it. And
wow.
Yeah, I haven't sold that one, but just the lunar one, which was cool. Okay.
Is there something where you can shoot it into space and just have it be returned to Stardust?
Yeah, there's an option of that. I'd have to look them up what they're technically called, but there's an orbit and then there's an Earth rise where they would come back and burn up as they come back into the atmosphere, and you wouldn't get anything back. It's just a matter
right, of, but you just know that
they, yeah, that they did that. And then the last one would be to go into deep space, and you just forever go out into space.
Wow. And yeah. And so you had one client that did this,
right?
Ones that did something other than the
not through lunar, us at or, the time. Okay. No,
yeah.
Oddly enough, we had just opened, and he just put that on the website. And the family, the lady had not passed, and she had said she wanted this. Shortly thereafter, she passed, and so then we met with her and did the whole cremation. She's also buried at Riverside National. And then the small portion I packaged myself. And there are two companies that specialize in this. One is Elysium, and I believe they're in San Francisco area. Huh. And then the one that we work with is out of Texas, and they're Celestis Memorial Space Flights.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah,
I really see the appeal there, actually. How was it for the clients?
Oh, she loved it. The daughter was just like, oh, this is exactly what my mom wants. And, you know, as we were meeting with her, every once in a while we'd joke about the to the moon. And
oh, I love that. There's this kind of joyful blast off quality.
Right.
Which is missing from death. Right. I remember when... was it? There was somebody who, I think it was one of the Arquette children died.
Mm-hmm.
David Arquette.
And his siblings, Susanna Arquette.
I think it was one of the Arquettes. And I think it was the Alex, who I think was trans and was dying of a, you know, slow terminal disease, and had requested that at the moment of death that all the siblings cheer and said, you know, kind of
a good send off.
Gave them a good send off, like, woohoo, you did
right,
it. Just
right.
Like if you were an astronaut was blasting off. So I love that idea.
Yeah.
And also how fortunate for the daughter that she knew what her mother wanted, because actually we don't always have these conversations
right.
with our loved ones. I'm sure you know better than anyone that
right.
some people come out going,
Yeah. And no one in the family really has an idea of what that person wanted, because maybe they've never discussed it. It was just not a thought in their mind.
Right, or it's awkward, or it's morbid, or you don't want to seem like...
Right.
People, I've said this before on the podcast, but people think that death is contagious or something. And
like I've had that.
Talking about it, that, oh, then it's going to happen. And like maybe the Grim Reaper, you know, like in Harry Potter, where if you say Voldemort, like people get really freaked out. Because they think he's going to appear or something. It's a little bit like that with death, I feel. That
right.
people are actually that death phobic. That
they are.
Just like, don't talk about it. Don't think about
right.
it. And as a result, it's actually really painful at the end.
Correct.
For people who didn't...
Because you don't know if you've honored them properly, because you weren't aware of what they would have wanted. So you're coming to assumptions. And most people are basing those assumptions on their lack of knowledge of options, and they'll go to the first funeral home that they find in the phone book, or the one that they most people have mentioned, so then they reach out to that one. In reality, there's so much competition in the funeral industry because there's so many different things and types of services and memorials options, but overall, the majority of them are kind of like you mentioned before, where it's the traditional burial in the ground, in the vault, in the casket, or the cremation. And even a cremation, I mean, you can have a memorial prior or a funeral prior to a cremation, and some people don't realize that. They just want the least expensive option possible.
Really? Oh, that's sad.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. We did, you know, for the deaths in my family, we've done ceremonies you know, with the body, and we've also done one post cremation, with the ashes there.
Right.
That was for my uncle, and we actually, he was a super big diver, scuba instructor, sailor, and so we put him in a Himalayan salt urn that was really beautiful, that
nice.
Pink salt, and then his diving buddies took him out to his favorite spot and dropped him there.
That is so cool.
May or may not have been legal in that particular spot, but
right, but depends where they took him, but yeah,
there are legal ways to do the sea burial as well.
Right. And even full body burial at sea. I had a opportunity to do quite a few of those at Argos as well.
Amazing.
Yeah, those are like, it's a whole nother, gosh, they are just beautiful. I mean, some people may get a little seasick if they're not prepared, but overall, just the fact that you're stuck on this yacht out on the ocean and there's nothing else around you but you, your loved one, and your family, your extended family, and we encourage the family to engage in the disposition in placing the loved one into the ocean, and you do similar service as you would on land. I mean, people are speaking, there's food that's available, flowers, music, you can bring doves too. It is a long trip. It's about a 4-hour turnaround.
Where is the drop-off point?
It has to be in at least 600 feet depth of water. So you usually go out well past 3 miles. And then once you find the location, you do kind of drift a little further out. So you end up being between 600 to 1,000 feet of depth of water. I've done a few in Morro Bay.
Beautiful.
Yeah, that was really nice as you leave the harbor to go out.
That's very special, momentous thing, and then you can go to Morro Bay. And
right, and it is beautiful up in Morro Bay. The other one that I did was in San Diego, which was even more beautiful. I mean, especially if they're a military, of military background, because as you leave the dock, you're passing the naval base and most of the military bases are down there, so that's another bonus. And it's interesting, as you go out, you have to cross over into Mexican waters and then come back around to the United States waters. But that was a fantastic service, and we jumped through so many hoops to make sure that happened for that lady, because unfortunately the person we were working with through the Morro Bay burials, his price was twice as much as what we now charge. And he's from back east, so, you know, we had to cut him out in order to please this family and get her what she wanted. And she was overly thrilled because it went exactly how she envisioned.
Oh, that's wonderful. What do you think people get from doing a service that's exactly what they envisioned and or exactly what their loved one who passed envisioned or what they spoke about with them? Versus kind of just doing whatever they think is what you do in this situation.
Right. I think there's a huge difference in having a vision of what you like and being able to bring that to fruition versus settling for options that are placed in front of you. I personally, even though I worked in the mortuary that I handled a lot of my loved ones through, I still felt kind of restricted. Because we don't normally offer that type of service, or it just wasn't something that no one at the time had discussed. So I had to go through the regular types of services. Like, I really would have loved to have brought my brother home and cared for him at home and done a home funeral, prepared his body ourselves, and done that type of service versus just having him in the refrigeration next to my office every day until disposition, which was kind of awkward. But also, at the same point, I knew that he was there.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of awkward and weird. And at the same time, for those of us who've had brothers in someone else's,
right,
next to someone else's office, it's also a luxury because at least you could be
right
knowing what's going on there. It's not a mystery. For us, it was like no idea what this person looks, you know, particularly if the coroner is involved, like, right. I don't know, you don't meet the coroner and make a connection, you don't get right. a sense that they're going to be particularly loving to, you know,
right.
So really wonderful that you, you know, got to have that connection. Right. And on the last podcast that we had on the show, somebody said, which actually hasn't gone out yet, but will, she said, if I have one bit of advice, like working with death, make friends with a mortician. She's
yeah.
She's a death writer.
Yeah, definitely is good to have a director in yeah. your back pocket.
Yeah, yeah, that's the real secret reason right. I invited you over.
Right. Well, like when my brother had passed, normally he would have gone to the morgue at the hospital, and then the mortuary would have come the following day after having this paperwork filled out. But being that I represented the mortuary and was a licensed yeah. funeral director, I was able to just take him directly from the floor home. Well, not home, but to the holding facility. I wish I would have been able to bring him home.
Yeah, I would absolutely.
Have, I had asked, but his wife didn't want him at the house, unfortunately. She didn't want to have, like so many people, they don't want death around them as if it's somehow contagious or yeah. it's going to contaminate their environment. So,
yeah, I think that goes back to what you and I spoke about a little bit before we started rolling here with children not being exposed to it. I mean, for a lot of people, they may not really have a death close to them until they're over 40 or 50. And
right.
at yeah. that point, the whole thing, you know, gives people the heebie-jeebies, or maybe they just don't know how to relate to it.
Right.
Whereas in cultures that are more tribal, historically around the world, you know, and cultures that have death happen more often at younger ages, right, with lower life expectancies.
Right.
It's pretty ordinary for the kids, and they might right. play next to the dead body, and
right.
they might, you know, have asked questions and have questions answered, and then when it comes around for them, there's this kind of Lion King circle of life understanding
right.
that we've robbed our children of.
Right, which and a lot of times it is the case. Unfortunately, when my husband's father had passed, he was kept from everything. Even knowing that he had passed. So for many years, he would look around looking to see, is that my dad? Is he coming back? So there's that disconnection of
oh,
the
gosh.
Fact that they're no longer coming back.
As a child. This happened as a child.
Right.
Oh, that's so
yeah.
sad.
And so even having my brother pass, I don't know why, but we sent one of his daughters home with the sister-in-law. And it was maybe 20, 30 minutes before he actually left. And had she been there, I think it would have been more healing for her because she could have physically touched him and saw that he's no longer in that vessel.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know how she deals with it and if she has any issues, to be honest, because as a whole, our family kind of had a falling out over my brother's passing. But
that's so sad to hear, and you know, it's sad, but also how common that is.
Right.
You hear that a lot.
Right.
And that's also not to be discounted because we don't know how to deal with death. It when it does come up, it can be very divisive. And I know with
right.
my friend Jill, the death doula down the street, that's why she got into it, was being close to a death that completely tore a family apart. And she thought, this is not how
yeah.
it needs to be.
It shouldn't be that way. I mean, people should embrace death. I mean, it's the one for sure thing in our life. It's our biggest event in our life other than giving birth to a child. But
sometimes the two go hand.
Right. yeah. But that was my main reason for going down now the path that I'm on training to become a death doula or a midwifery service. I want to incorporate that into the funeral industry and wanting the families, even the person who's going to pass, to be able to let go of things so that they can consciously die and be aware that this is happening and it's natural and to go with it so that they don't take any negative thoughts or feelings in with them into the next life. Right. Some people believe that, you know, this is it. This is all we have. Some people believe they go to heaven and everything's honky-dory there. Or some people believe you come back in another life form. Right. And I believe anything is possible, really. I'm not sure. And I really look forward to it, kind of strangely. Like, yeah. I have absolutely no fear of dying. And I on one hand, I can't wait, but I would love to, in the meantime, do as much as I can to change people's perspective on the funeral industry and dying, and that it's not something to be hush-hush and whisk the body away as soon as it's passed. You know, we're there when they're born, we're there when they're young, we're there when they're ill and in good health and bad, and why not be there when they've passed and take care of them in a manner you would if they would still be breathing, so.
Right, and it can be jarring at first. When my brother Andrew passed away, I really hadn't been close to anyone. I was 28 at the time. I hadn't been close to anyone. The snorts in the background are our special guest, Luna the Chihuahua. I really hadn't been close to anyone who died. I had lost my grandmother when I was 13, but I hadn't been that close with her anyway, and she was very old and sick, so it was its own thing. And this was the first, you know, really close in death, and it was a car accident, sudden death. And I was pretty scared to see his body. I was very afraid to see his body.
You're right.
Not particularly because I thought that there was going to be a zombie moment or that I was afraid of some bad juju or something, as we sometimes are. But just the difference of seeing him that way.
Right.
I knew would make it so real. And it was just so unknown and foreign to me. It scared the shit out of me.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And my mom was like, Kelly, this is just Andrew. This is just Andrew's body. And you love Andrew, and you love Andrew's body. And you've hugged this body many, many times, and you still love this body. And it's, you know, it's going to be different, and it's also going to be the same.
Right.
And that really quelled my freak out. By the way, I was the only one in the family that was really freaked out on that level about seeing the body. And it was just totally fine because it really was just him, you know, and it was also very disturbing. And there were things that had been done to his body by the mortuary that were actually pretty disturbing. Like, they had sewn his lips up and done a kind of sloppy job of it. And like, that's disturbing.
Yeah.
And there had been an autopsy, and it hadn't fully been, like, closed the skull up. Hadn't been, so there was, like, a distorted quality. They did later close it up, which was fine, but, right. But overall, it was kind of a profound realization to go, oh, it's actually just my loved one.
Right.
And it's this piece of them that they no longer need.
Right. I also find that it's kind of interesting that sometimes it helps you realize that even though we are in these bodies, that we are not this body, that we're something more than that, that our spirit or soul or whatever you want to call it within this body is really what our connection is to each other, that the fact that we have skin and bones and a little vessel that we can go through this thing called life is really cool. But when you see a loved one in that state that is somewhat disfigured and manipulated, you realize those things, I find, that was their little vessel, but they're no longer there, and they're no longer in that pain, that even though it may look like they're in pain, not being fully put back together, but that's something that I've learned in my many years of dealing with a lot of bodies. That, you know, you still have a profound sense of respect for their vessel, but you also know that's all that it is a vessel for us.
Yeah, has that view developed and deepened over years of working with bodies?
Yeah, and seeing them in different states of decomposition and different you know, circumstances of their death, and then going through the doula training and realizing that that we are a soul and that this is the vessel, that we should honor it. But there's so much more than just this body. And that's why I'm so interested in the doula training, so that I can help people realize that we are so much more than our vessel. That it's so important, if at all possible, to die consciously. Because that makes a whole difference when you go to the next life or to your next journey, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about your vision for DIY dying that you will be launching soon?
Well, I hope to help one person at a time, basically. I look to offer my services to assist both the living and the dead, either to incorporate the doula aspect into people's services, or to do the funeral service. I want to be able to encompass it all. So I'd like to meet with people if they've been terminally diagnosed, to help them get emotionally and physically prepared for that transition, and then to assist the family with their own caretaking of their loved one within their home. And then once we've come up with the death certificate and their final disposition, to then assist the family in having that come to fruition, whether it be a cremation or a green burial or full body burial at sea. I also want to incorporate as much of American-made, handmade, natural, repurposed materials in my funeral services as possible. So I'm not looking to offer concrete vaults or metal caskets. I'm going to specialize more in the shrouds and the wicker baskets and the pine boxes and things to that
nature. So those are green burial.
For the green burial.
Yeah.
Yeah. But competition in LA is very high for the green burial, because there's only a few of us that are offering it, and then the price is just crazy at some of the cemeteries. So,
green burial is actually significantly more affordable in general. And by the way, sea burial is a form of green burial.
It is,
right?
Yeah.
If it's
yeah.
done properly.
If it's done properly. There is an outfit in the Long Beach area that does green burials. They do full body burials at sea, in the cemetery that's between San Pedro and Catalina, where they have two separate boats and the family's on one and your loved one's in a casket, in a metal casket on the other. And there's so many holes that are necessary to be drilled and weight that's put in the casket. But then that's not going to decompose at the bottom of the ocean. So I want to incorporate the shrouding, and that's what I'm more familiar with. And I think it ties more into the green aspects.
Can you describe the shroud?
It's just like any other shroud, basically. It's like a canvas material.
It's white, usually.
Yeah, usually white. They do come in different colors. They do come in different shapes. I would assume different materials based on the coloring that you're selecting. And then we would weight you down with either stones or like little cannonballs, so that when you go overboard, there's no chance of you popping back up. You're weighted. You're going to go straight to the bottom. And then what happens is supposed to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so cool. And before we move on and wrap up, I'm wondering if you can throw out a few more out-of-the-box options that you have offered or come across or even just know about. In addition to green burial,
sure.
And lunar burial and sea burial.
Right. Well, I it's not an option for everyone, but and I'm not too positive right now on the name of what it's called, but where you are laid out above ground and you're allowed to decompose naturally above ground. That I kind of dig myself, because I don't necessarily want to go in the ground, although if that's all that's available for me when my time comes, then that'd be fine. But there's a place in Tennessee, a body farm, where they do scientific research. But I've heard that there's a, I think it's in Oregon, where they allow you to do that kind of burial.
Cool. And then there's also a woman named Katrina Spade in Seattle is also working on recomposition, she calls it.
Yeah, recomposition. That would be another thing.
And then you basically decompose into soil and the family gets the soil back.
Right.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. And what about the volcano one? Also, never... I love this. It's so wild.
Right. Well, you don't actually go to the summit of the volcano because it's kind of dangerous, but you go somewhere up on the side of the mountain, or the volcano rather, where there's a safe enough point where you can scatter. And they do offer it in Hawaii. There isn't like this crazy permit or anything that you need to get. You just have to pay the fee to be able to access the park, and then you can go out there. You tell them what you're doing, and then you go, and then you scatter. I haven't done it yet, but I did reach out to see if it would be possible, and I met a woman there that does do it, just as you can get scattered in the ocean in Hawaii as well. Just figured something else that's different. I mean, here in the United States, in California in particularly, if you're going to be scattered on private land, you need to have permission of the property owner. So, per se, like at a national park, it is possible to do the scattering. You just have to go through the right channels to get the right the permission.
Right.
Yeah.
And then I heard you mention in the video that you guys were featured on the news locally, and you mentioned doing Viking funerals. What's the deal with that?
Okay.
Did that become a reality?
No, it did not. And the reason it's not a reality is because of the burning of
So will you say what a Viking funeral is for those who may not know?
Sure. Well, a Viking funeral would be is you're laid out on a little wooden boat, so to speak. And then you're out at sea, and from a distance you would be shot with arrows that have fire on them, and you would ignite and then burn, and everything would go into the water in a perfect world. Right, it would be really cool. But the logistics of it are a little bit difficult, as the temperature of the body being burned needs to be at a certain temperature. So there's other things to consider, like we were gonna douse the body in a certain chemical that would burn it quicker. But like I said, in looking at the EPA's website, I see that that's just not possible right now because of the restrictions on the fire and the smoke and the burning of unnatural things out at sea.
Is it actually worse than a cremation in terms of greenhouse gases?
You know, I haven't looked into that, but it could potentially be, which is maybe why they have the restrictions.
Right, but then it's really bad already, cremating. Like, it's a lot of carcinogens that you're... dumping out there. I think I heard one cremation is the equivalent to a road trip from LA to Boston or something.
I wouldn't doubt it.
And as it becomes more common, it's quite a thing. But
but now we have the water cremation versus fire cremation, which is not at all as bad for the environment.
Right. It's legal here in California now.
Right. It's just really expensive for the machine to do it in. So not very many funeral homes have that option for you.
Right. Probably
it's more prevalent in the pet industry. Yeah, in the pet cremation.
Right, for little pets.
Right.
Well, I for one hope that the Viking funeral happens and that we figure that out, because that's pretty...
Well, they do have in Colorado the outdoor cremations where you're put on a pyre and lit there.
My husband's mother died of cancer when he was 20, and we had her. He and I were not together, but friends at the time, and they had her burned outdoors.
Oh, wow!
And it took many hours, and it was really sacred and powerful and much more meaningful.
Right. Right, I think that would be so cool to witness. Because when you're at a crematory, you know, once the little chamber closes, you're not really seeing the cremation take place.
It's pretty freaking unromantic.
Right.
I mean, and then you think, should I stay for the whole time? But then they're like, it's going to be 4 hours, 5 hours.
Right.
So you don't really want to sit in the Nah. Very industrial.
Yeah, it's usually in a very industrial area, environment.
And the noise is intense. And the heat is intense. Yeah. And you're like, should we go get brunch? Like,
yeah, usually they don't let you stay anyways. I mean, you can witness the insertion of your loved one in.
Right, which we did.
Yeah, and you can always come back once the remains are cooled down to pick up the same day, depending on the time. But for the most part, that's all you're going to get is the visual of them going in, and then you're asked to leave, basically.
Right. Yeah, that's what we did with my brother, Gregory, second brother, who passed away this year. Mm-hmm. And actually that piece right here that you see, we burned him with this. And when I reached in to scatter his ashes in the mountains of Colorado area where we had permission, I reached in and I was the first one to take a handful, and I got this.
Oh, wow.
It's a Dorje, so it's a Buddhist little iron sculpture.
Very cool.
And it was pretty shocking.
Yeah, it's interesting that it was still in with the remains. Burned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I, you know, probably still has some of his ashes on it, and I was like, I got the Cracker Jack prize.
Yeah.
anyway, that just made me think of that.
Right. Usually we remove the metals out of the ashes.
Right.
So it's you odd that they would have left that
there. I thought it was odd, too.
It was meant to be, though.
That's
the coolest thing, that you were able to pull that out.
It was, and it felt like a little communication from him. And
right, a little full circle came back there.
Yeah, and he had a kind of a twisted sense of humor, so it felt like something that might happen in the wake of his presence. But, yeah, if we could have done that not in an industrial setting, I really would have preferred it. It's quite a weird... I mean, hospitals are similar, right, when you're dying?
Right, they are. Yeah, and that's the unfortunate thing is this is such a special moment in a lot of people's lives that when designing a funeral home with a crematory, that they don't consider that aspect and think about the environment that the chambers are in so that it could be more welcoming and more... therapeutic versus you feel like you are in an industrial area and you just kind of want to get out of that situation. It's uncomfortable all the way around. So in my long-term goal, which I haven't mentioned yet, is I'd like to own or find a piece of land that I could preserve, and I want to make it a natural burial ground, but I don't want to disturb the land other than burying people without headstones and markers and things to that nature, but to make it a park for people to come and go and to know that people are buried here, and that makes it even more special, you know. And hopefully in doing that, I can maybe design a mortuary with a crematory on the property to facilitate everything for the families, for those that want to be cremated as well as buried.
And as a doula, it's your vision also to be able to be there with the person as they die and help with the funeral planning, and then have it be like a one-stop shopping?
Yeah,
last-stop shopping.
There you go. Last-stop shopping.
You can use that.
Oh, that's a good one. I hadn't thought of it. Yeah. So the DIY is just that. It's either, you know, some people can look at it as design it yourself or do it yourself. Yeah. And basically, I want to be there to help them do it themselves. I want to show them the tools so that they can feel that they are the ones that handled it. And yeah, I can file the death certificate for them so they don't have to do that tedious aspect of it, or the transportation if necessary, the legalities for them. But everything else, I hope to be able to give them the power and the knowledge and the understanding that it's everything, anything is possible and everything's okay.
I love that. Cool. Well, you can do that for me should that happen too soon.
Yeah, not anytime soon.
Hopefully not. But that sounds like
really
something I would wish for a loved one. I that's exactly the kind of experience I would want.
Right.
Because it's hard enough, right? Even with everything going beautifully
right.
and with so much meaning and ceremony infused to it.
Right.
Still sucks. Still devastating. I mean, it's also a magical, beautiful time, but still really hard. So why not create the most beautiful, easy way to deal with this? So I thank you for the vision you're working on. It's really beautiful. We need more options like that.
Thank you.
Yeah. And for yourself, is there one wish that you, I always ask people, is there one wish that you have for yourself for end of life?
Just that I'm present in my dying process, and I am blessed with my family surrounding me as I go through my transition, and that they take on that role to care for my body, and that they find it in their hearts that they can do a green burial of some sort for me, given wherever I may pass, if it's in California or if I have to move somewhere else to find my land to preserve.
Yeah.
So be it. But that's what I hope. If not, I told them, as I just had to do a death care directive for my training, that I want green burial or full body burial at sea. So one or the other.
Mm, beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing, Sean, and thank you so much for coming here post-dentist, so double points.
Thank you. Totally forgot about that appointment.
Well, we really appreciate it, and we're very excited to see the launch of DIY Dying.
This conversation is brought to you by the When You Die Project. From existential afterlife questions to palliative care and the nuts and bolts of green burial, if it has to do with death, we're talking about it. WhenYouDie.org